Everybody, drop your buffs.
Hello and welcome back to Drop Your Buffs. I'm Sean Ross.
I'm Evan Ross Katz.
And we are here talking Survivor 45, Episode 1, We Can Do Hard Things.
This feels like opening night on Broadway, where it's like, because, you know, like we do this every week, but we're like talking about something where there's no timeliness to it typically. In fact, it's like we have like Kathy Vavrick O'Brien on to talk about like events of like 20 plus years ago. And then yeah. Here we are today. Like, I feel like we're like not reporting live, but there's just like a prescience to doing live coverage.
Totally.
Air quotes live. I consider this is a few days later. I think we're live.
We're live. It's live. It's as live as we get, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I have to say.
Yeah.
Sorry, but like, I think it's good to take a few days to process anything in life.
Especially something like this.
I actually feel more excited to come on today, not just to talk about the episode, but to talk about the reaction to the episode.
There's been a big reaction. Who knew? All of this marketing. Jeff is going all around New York City, lighting up monuments in colors that nobody would recognize as Survivor colors, all to promote. I think it's strange. We haven't seen this much of a market. They didn't even have this much of a marketing push for Winners at War. And it's funny that this is the episode that they were pushing in the marketing. Like, I don't know if they were really like thinking about the fact that they want to get viewers' eyeballs on this show again. And this was the episode that they wanted to do that with, that they pushed, put this push behind, which has been such a polarizing episode, it seems. I wonder if it's polarizing. It's like, I have seen that the overwhelming reaction to this episode has been negative.
Well, but on like the polarizing point, the things that people seem polarized about are really worth unpacking, I feel, in talking about the ways in which fandom has homogenized in many senses. And these collective opinions are built sometimes when I don't think people consider like the larger landscape. And I think the most polarizing thing I've seen, and tell me if you're thinking of something else, is the boot of, hold on, I'm going to look at my reference sheet printed out by my fiance. So Hannah's quit.
Yes.
And all of everything around that. And when I say around that, I mean people's feelings about it, former Survivor players hopping on Twitter, etc. That conversation is super interesting to me. As much as what actually happened with the quit, but like the, you know, like people going online right now, I heard this, and they're going to her job and like putting like bad ratings on her job and everything. That speaks to fandom, and not specifically, in my opinion, Survivor fandom, but like fandom culture.
Yes.
And I think that's interesting.
Well, it's very interesting. And Survivor has always had a toxic fandom culture, which they have tried to avoid acknowledging. But like, I don't really see that a whole, like, I'm not on that side of the internet. And maybe it's because I stopped going on Survivor Reddit, where a lot of this sort of like toxic culture happens. But like, honestly, yeah, I'm hearing that that's the conversation. And yeah, I've seen some tweets, particularly from former survivors. But actually, I feel like I'm maybe living in a little bit of a bubble where it's like, okay to be like, Hannah's iconic for quitting, which like, yes, is hyperbolic. But like, that's sort of the bubble I'm living in. And I think it's funny.
I don't think it's hyperbolic. I think it's true. I think we're aligned. No, but like, okay, seriously, good. I think we're completely aligned.
I wasn't sure how you felt about it.
No. I think it's iconic. I think she's great. Quit, please, by all means. I think this reminds me of the come on in you guys conversation from 41, where to me it's like such a red herring, because it's like Survivor sort of like, and again, I don't know how much this is like production, fandom, that part I don't quite know, but how much it's like, here's this thing, and it's like, we need to have an opinion on both the Hannah quit and quitting in Survivor, and you as a fan of Survivor must come down strongly on it, and what did you make of Jeff's reaction to the quit, and what do you make of comparing Jeff's reaction in 45 to his reaction when Austin quit in Pearl Islands? That becomes the conversation, and to me it's like, it ignores, as you pointed out, it's simply iconic. Like, not, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's hyperbole. No, but like, it's a fun, unexpected thing to have happen. And as a result, Emily now stays in the game. And I think we can agree, I think we, when I the Drop Your Buffs fandom, correct me if I'm wrong, we want Emily in this game.
Uh-huh, we do.
So, and sometimes you have to sacrifice a Hannah to keep an Emily. And mind you, isn't it great that the person that quit is someone that we didn't want to quit versus it being some like dud that we're like, okay, go ahead, quit. Like, this is the best case scenario in this given circumstance.
Absolutely, 100%. And I really stand by the opinion that yes, she quit, but her quitting made the first boot of 45 memorable. And you can't say that about every season. I am not going to forget Hannah anytime soon. And like, I come to this show not necessarily, as we've talked about, for the strategy and the gameplay. Like, that is an element that I'm interested in, of course, but I come to this show for the humans and the unique characters and these funny moments, like Hannah, you know, talking about her nicotine withdrawal and having this breakdown on the island and then like begging to be sent home without a vote. Like, that's what I come to Survivor for. And so for that, I thank her.
Thank you, Hannah. And I think, and to your point about you saying it's like the bubble of the internet that you're on, I feel like sometimes, and I'm not just saying the Survivor fandom, I'm saying fandoms get like pilled in a way to like have these either like just strong feelings about things that I think that they, if they really thought about, would realize that they don't hate, they just have been conditioned to think they hate a thing when they see it. It's kind of like the world that we're living in. It's like, Emily is great. She's like the number, she's like something to keep your eye on. Granted, it's episode one, like, but like, Emily is certainly one to watch. And I think that like, if the fandom collectively like agreed that we want the Emily type players in the game, like her, I have to say, there was a moment after she had her, you know, big first moment on the boat, when Jeff was like, this is great. And then the rest of the contestants, whatever, clapped. And I was like, that's the shit I hate.
Yeah.
Because it's celebrating her for doing a thing that's like, I just want this to be the baseline of how we play the game. I don't need the meta thing on top of it. That's like Jeff recognizing that she just did something in terms of creating great television. It's like, let's just create great television. Let's not create great television and then have a beat where we all collectively are like, yay, we made great television. That to me deflates the balloon.
Yeah, totally. And I got it, hand it to Emily also, because you have Bruce as a returning player, which we've talked about is pretty anticlimactic, to have our first returning player in the new era in five seasons be somebody who was medevaced in, you know, the opening moments of Survivor 44. Like, I'm happy he gets to play again for him, but like, that's not the kind of person I'm dying to see back on my screen. And so the fact that we're getting like so much reverence for Bruce amongst his fellow contestants on 45, save for Emily, and just some like excitement among the fandom, it feels like, that I'm kind of confused as to where it's coming from, which, like, no disrespect to Bruce, it's just I don't know him, right?
We don't know him.
And so to have that sort of reverence and that be built up preseason, for Emily to come in and just like swipe it aside and make it an issue, like, I love that.
Love that. Also, though, do you think like the baseline understanding is that the 17 other people in this game know who Bruce is?
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's just like such a bummer, because it's like, it would be great if people were like, okay, like, okay, great. Like, welcome back. It's interesting. Did you see the scenes for next week's episode?
Yeah, it's like
there Emily seems to be like now. Bruce is like really starting to like rub people the wrong way. And there were all these like shots of Bruce, and like there was one of him like doing the robot.
Yeah.
And in that moment, I was like reminded of the fact that like, we don't know Bruce.
Yeah.
It's funny that like, we're giving this much, like, we're even calling Bruce a returning player, to me is funny. I do agree that there are advantages that he has in the mental preparation aspect of the show. Like, I don't disagree. I also think that, like, every advantage in Survivor is also a disadvantage. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of, like, how you play it, how other people react. There's so many variables. But for Bruce to be like this character, I'm like, we don't know him. He's as new to us as the 17 other players from the fan perspective.
Totally. He's totally new to us. We have no idea who he is. We only ever knew him concussed, right?
Right.
Like, let alone the fact that we got him for like 12 to 20 minutes, whatever it was, in Survivor 44. He wasn't his self in those minutes. And so now we're getting him. And like, I like Bruce. Like, he seems like a fine character. Is he the kind of guy that I come to Survivor for? Not necessarily, but like, I do like this sense that there's something bubbling under, that actually maybe he's a little bit annoying, right? And we got this whole montage of him talking about like how they should be living at camp, what they need to be doing, what they need to be focusing on. Like, it all might actually be good advice that he's giving. And granted, he was only out there for a short time, 12 hours or whatever, but like, I'm sure he also picks up a lot of secondhand knowledge, you know, being friends with a cast who did play for the full 26 days, etc. And so he is coming in with some knowledge. But the fact that it's maybe rubbing people the wrong way is like an interesting turn for me.
Yes, absolutely. So let's discuss like the biggest change that we have on the show, which is the jump from 60 to 90 minutes. I wanted to mention something interesting. I was listening to an interview that Tim Gunn, the iconic former host of Project Runway, he did an interview on the Keep It podcast, and he was asked what his least favorite season of Project Runway was. And being a great interview subject, Tim Gunn was ready to answer the question with specificity and said it was season 8. And when asked why, he said that was the season that we went from 60 to 90 minutes. And I heard this in the days leading up to this premiere, and I was like, that's really interesting. And I thought about that as I was watching this episode. And I think it's a little too early to come away with any like conclusions about is 60 to 90 better? Is it worse? What have you? All we can do is sort of talk about what it was like in this singular experience. And from my perspective, I was surprised at how little time we got with so many characters. In my mind, the extra 30 minutes was going to give us time to focus on the tribes that were not at the center of either not receiving the reward or not going to tribal. And in this case, I know, like, you know, we had talked about how excited we were for people like D. We were really excited to see, look at me, I'm referencing that sheet right now.
Kelly, I mean, like, my winner pick was Kelly from the cast assessment, right? Like, we did get a little bit of her, but that Blue Bellow tribe.
Jemiah. We were really hoping to get some time with her. So it's funny, coming out of this episode, I don't feel like I got a ton of time with the full roster of the cast. And there were, for me, a lot of like bring a book moments in this episode that I just was like, I need us to speed through this a little bit more to hold my attention, because 90 minutes is just a long time. That is like the length of a lot of movies. And so it's not necessarily a conversation on like the quality of Survivor so much as it is like, What about this being 90 minutes made it better as opposed to tightening the 60 minutes that perhaps made the show drag a little bit in these past seasons?
Yeah. Well, I'm also not sure that I'm ready to make this assessment yet based on episode one. The point to note about episode one is that actually this is our shortest premiere we've had in the new era. Every premiere from 41 to 44 has been 2 hours, actually. And so this is actually a shortened premiere in this new era, and I think we'll really start to get a sense of what this 90 minutes is like in week two, week three.
Yes. Can I interest you in like an off-the-cuff game?
Okay.
Okay, so I just want, let's go through, and I think this can be quick actually, but we'll go through the 18. And there's a term, and again, we're just having fun here, but there's a term that NeNe Leakes likes to use when talking about Real Housewives, and she'll call them stars or starless. And I just, what I want to say for this is just who of the people, and again, this isn't them, this is so much of like the time and the edit within the episode that we got. I would love to know who we think are the stars so far. And let's be honest here, I would say like 2/3 will not be stars, not because they don't have star quality, but because this episode did not present them as stars. In the way that, let's just start off by saying, Brandon, star of this episode. Brandon, star.
Big star.
Emily.
Star. She's a constellation. Star.
Hannah.
Star. Iconic. Queen.
Caleb.
Right now, starless.
Starless. Sabaya.
Star.
Star. Sean.
Sean the player. Starless.
I'm giving star.
You like him.
Yeah, we'll come back to the star. Okay, Austin.
Austin?
Are you saying that like you don't know who that is?
No, I just forgot who he was. You know what? Based on the underwear scene, I got to give him a little bit of a star.
I know, but I feel like that's our like thirst bias.
But it's like, look, we can't sit around saying cast hot people on Survivor again, and then like we get a hot person and we call them starless.
Okay, you're right. Star. D.
You know what? There's star quality, but I don't know that she's star yet.
That's not the game.
She's not star yet. She's starless here right now.
Drew.
Starless.
Starless. Jemiah.
Star.
Starless. Not in, from this episode, that's not a star. Come on, Sean.
Yeah, I know. I like her narration. Like, I know she was only on a little bit, but she did pop for me.
I like it too, but again, this is speaking to the edit, not the quality of the person. Okay. Julie.
I want to say star.
Starless. Sifu.
Starless.
Star.
I Brando. See where you're coming from.
But... Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Brando.
Starless.
Starless. Bruce.
Star.
I'm giving star too. Jake.
Star.
Starless, but yeah, one to watch. Katora.
Starless.
Starless. And I think that's going to be our controversial opinion within like the fandom, but I think starless. Kelly.
Star.
Starless. Kendra.
Star.
Starless. Okay.
No.
Okay,
you're
great.
Giving like, Kendra a starless?
Yeah, it's not. I'm just talking about the edit of this episode.
I know, me too. I know I know I veered, but like I would say that Kendra was a star. The Libra talk, the September babies talk. Like I do think, and then her complaining about Bruce, like she's the POV we got complaining about Bruce. Like I think she gave in this episode.
I think one can give without being a star. Like, I hear you because I think that, like, maybe when we replay this sometime, it's like star quality because for me, Kendra has star quality. But anyway, so this is an interesting game just because I think it helps us sort of situate who is just rising in the episode in terms of airtime, in terms of creating plot, moving the show forward. And like, yeah, it's like you look at an episode like this and it's like Brando is not a player in this episode, right? We maybe gave, again, I'm at my list. We might have given Drew that opening moment in the episode, but like Drew did not rise to the occasion of emerging from this episode as someone to talk about. Austin, I know we're saying star through our horny lens, but like again, Austin, like not giving us much in the way that like you talk about an Emily or a Hannah or a Brandon. It's like they are the stars of season 45, episode 1.
Well, I have to say that just that exercise, and this is getting to a broader point here, just that exercise got me a little bit invigorated about Survivor 45. And the popular opinion, as I said, was that like people didn't like this premiere. And I definitely had that reaction watching it. I was very like, you know, it's very easy for me to pick things apart in the moment. Having sat with it, having rewatched it, I kind of like this premiere. And yeah. I think it's a good cast of characters.
Would you say that you had a similar experience to me where your like went like rose in the second watch?
Yes, but I don't even think it was the watch necessarily. It was having seen the discourse and having seen that there was something to talk about, because so often in the new era, there's not been something to talk about. And just the fact that on one episode, we had a lot to talk about, and there's a lot of like funny moments and low-key funny moments and like very obvious funny moments. And it's just like there's little things sprinkled throughout this episode that are worthy of discussion. And I appreciate it for that.
Yeah, like when they're, are they talking about the pyramids?
Yeah.
And it's funny because this was obviously filmed a while ago, but there's obviously that big like Roman Empire, I don't know, viral moment happening right now. And that moment was very evocative of sort of like, you thought they were almost like baiting Emily into being like, how often do you think about the pyramids? And she's just like, I don't, which was very like, Martin Scorsese actually said he does think about the Roman Empire. There have been instances of celebrities that have just been like, what are we doing here? Anyway, yeah, but yes, I agree with you. I think S45 gave us something to talk about. And yes, it's very easy to pick it apart. I enjoyed the fact that we have these few days to sort of understand where the conversation is going. I did want to zero in on a conversation that I saw emerge from the episode. And this is really interesting. I heard this on Rob Has a Podcast. Rob Cesternino was texting with Tyson after the premiere and commenting on the fact that of like I think Rob made a comment about like that, like saying who two of the nerds of this season were, and Tyson pushed back to sort of just be like, this is a cast comprised of majority nerds. And then Rob sort of realized that like in this era of Survivor, Rob would be akin to like the macho male. Like Rob Sestrinino would kind of be a Rob Mariano of today, just because of how this show has changed in terms of the characters it casts. And one, I thought LOL of like Rob Sestrinino recognizing that. And I like people who are self-aware, and Rob has a good sense of humor in that sense. But it is interesting because it's like, this is a, yeah, we have moved into an era. I've been trying to sort of put my finger on it. And obviously we know we heavily cast fans now, but one of the core qualities of like, well, what is it about the fans? And it's like fans in general, fans of things, tend to be nerdy because I think there's a corollary there. I don't know the science of why, but like, yeah, but like this is a show comprised mostly of nerds.
Yeah, it is. And that's also been a big point of discussion is that, okay, well, I mean, I think we're extrapolating here just from Brandon and Hannah, but a lot of people are talking about like they're just casting crybabies, you know, who are these losers, et cetera, et cetera. And like, while I do tend to agree to some extent, and you know, I'm going to contradict myself because at once I'm like, actually, the level of intensity that Brandon and Hannah brought to their discomfort on the island was so refreshing and reminded me of old school Survivor, because there was that element of them realizing that they are going to live outside and survive off the land, and they are completely incapable of doing so because it's like their first time ever touching grass and they decided to do it in Fiji. And like that is what I love about Survivor, or that's like an element of, that I love about old school Survivor, and it's back in these people. And I think they have that quality because they are nerds, right? And it's not that you have to be a nerd to have that quality. I mean, like Ceree had that quality in Panama. She wasn't a nerd, right? She was just like, came off as like a suburban lady. I don't think she was suburban, but that sort of element of like, we're really taking people out of their comfort zone. Right. And so to actually see that is refreshing, I feel like. But at the same time, like, I will continue to be like, let's go back to casting models and actors here and there.
Oh, no, I think I would welcome that. It's also interesting, again, to give Rob Has a Podcast the plug, which apparently I'm doing a lot of today. They did a fantastic interview. they did a fantastic interview with Sophie Clark, in which they sort of talked about the ways in which the show has changed in terms of its casting. And one of the discussions was, you just get a lot of these beta players now. That's sort of like how the show is designed. And I don't know why this is the person coming to mind, but like Shannon from, is it Nicaragua?
Nicaragua, yeah.
Yeah, homophobe Shannon. It's like you don't get those like big character types who aren't like performing, trying to make reality television, but are just inherently sort of alpha personalities, not coming on the show and saying, I'm going to either be a beta or I'm going to pretend to be a beta. It's like someone just coming in and their alphaness is so inherent to who they are and how they live in the world that it can't help but permeate the game. We just don't really see that. I mean, even looking at your players, like you've got your Brandos, you've got your Drews, you've got your Brandons. And then even like, I guess Austin, who I would say was one of our more conventional casting choices in terms of recognizing us of like old school casting, he even referenced this in his video. It's giving way more Woo than it is Shannon. And I know most fans are going to be like, well, we want Woo over Shannon. I get it. I want both. But I want like those. I miss that like Shannon type. Isn't that funny? I miss the homophobe.
That's not surprising.
Yeah.
But
I said funny, yeah, that's surprising.
Just like thinking through this, the alpha males we have, for example, on the Reba tribe, like it's, Austin, sorta, but not really. It's like Sifu, maybe? I don't even know that I would, but like that's the level.
He is not alpha, he's himbo.
Sifu?
Yeah.
You think he's himbo?
He's classic himbo.
For me, he's giving like, it feels like with the casting, they were going for a coach type.
Perhaps. I get that. But then when you have that first shot on the boat where he's literally doing Tai Chi on the boat.
Yeah.
I feel like that's giving himbo.
That's giving coach.
Hmm. You're right.
But then you look at another tribe and it's like the Lulu tribe, for example. Who's our alpha male? Caleb. Like, he is not a traditional alpha male. Do you know what I mean? If we had to choose one from that tribe. And from Bellow, it's like Bruce? Because Jake very pointedly sort of like undermines the stereotype of the alpha male by being like, I know I seem this way, but I'm not this way. I actually love musical theater.
Right.
And so we've got Bruce, who also, as we've seen, he's just kind of like being a bit of a goofball and a little bit annoying, but not like in a really like heavy-handed way that we're used to seeing alpha males. So they're just like, aren't really any.
Right. Which is just not something to say,
I feel like I'm sounding like Andrew Tate on this rant, but like, I'm not saying it's like a bad thing or a good thing. It's just interesting.
I'm leaning more towards bad thing than a good thing, but I agree. It's like, it's not that, I think what we're citing here is the redundancy of it, right?
Yeah.
That I think is the sort of qualm. It's like, again, if there was a themed season and it was like, we're casting all nerds, we'd love that. But it's like, now that we sort of just, now that we cast majority nerds, it seems, it's just a matter of missing the thing that you no longer have that you once had. Because if we only cast those alpha types, I would say I would miss the nerd. So I think it's more the desire for variance than it is necessarily saying this is bad.
Yeah. You know, the themes are back. This season has a theme. It's Survivor 45, Lawyers at War.
Truly. What is that?
The lawyers. It's wild. We talked about this in our cast assessment, exclusively available on Patreon. That they cast three different lawyers. One almost lawyer, because Jemiah was accepted into law school, but gave that up to pursue her music. So we've got like four people in the law realm. We're joking about it. And lo and behold, it comes up as a plot point in episode one here, where Couture's talking about like, I'm not going to tell them I'm a lawyer because they're all worked up about Jake being a lawyer. And I feel like I'm so glad that paid off, the lawyer talk.
I wonder though, if I were her, first of all, you know me, I never understand the like, I'm going to be deceptive about who I am outside the game. Show me an example of that deceptiveness moving someone toward the end of the game in a way in which it wouldn't have had they just told people their truth. Does any example come to mind for you?
No, there might, somebody might.
Yeah, I'm not saying there's not. I'm actually saying show me one. I'm not saying that like show me one because one doesn't exist. no, like show me one. But anyway, I wonder if you're Katora, do you have a moment with Jake where you try and like create a bridge in the fact that like, we're both lawyers. It's almost like cops are us, but it's like lawyers are us over on the Blue Tribe. Like, I feel like there's an opportunity there.
There's totally, and she may pull that out at some point. But now is it dangerous for her to pull that out and be like, well, why was she lying about that? Because you know that's not the only thing she lied about in this episode. She really snuck this one in. But when those girls came together, Keturah, Kelly, and Kendra, and we're like, you know, we're all September babies, I'm a Libra, we're Virgos, great, like, this is meant to be, I'm 29, I'm 30, oh my god, we're all 29 and 30. Keturah is 34. So
I have her as 35 on my sheet.
Well, she's either 34 or 35.
Okay,
but she may be 35 now, but 34 when she played, possibly. Doesn't matter, honestly. The point is, she's not 29 or 30. And, like, that's a fun little way for it to, like, that's a fun little way to lie. That's, like, it's not that big of a deal to lie. Because we made a big deal about, what was his name? Sammy? Lying about his age in 43. But here, like, we have a moment. It's not, like, a big deal. She doesn't talk about it, right? Like, people only caught it because they're, like, wait, she's not that age. And so, like, this is a moment where I can be, like, okay, I can see it's a really small lie, and is it going to have any consequence whatsoever? But no, but like maybe not. But in these like opening moments where they're connecting, this little lie of like aging herself down, you know, 4 or 5 years, like helped these girls bond and come together. And if this is something that like they are able to write out to the end, which I like desperately hope will happen with Emily in tow, then, you know, like that's a lie that suddenly makes sense to me.
You want an all-girls alliance. You want Katora, Kelly, Kendra, and then to rope in Emily and have it be...
Yeah, I think that could be fun.
I could be into that.
Yeah.
But then it's like we're leaving out Julie, Jemiah, D. I honestly, this is one of those moments where it's like, I need more time with the girlies
totally.
to figure out my ranking.
I'm not saying that I want them in the, you know, at the exclusion of like a Sabaya, but yes, I'm just seeing those three come together like was kind of exciting because I was like, oh, this is like an interesting group.
It is exciting to have them come together. I'm always like, I think ever since, what's the Yellow Tribe from 41?
Yasa.
I remember like the excitement about thinking about them staying true to the end and then that falling apart. I mean, granted, we got it with the I also feel like because we just got it with the Tika 3, I feel like we just had a season in which a trio got to the end together that I think just thematically it's like we need to try on, you know, try a different outfit on. But I agree with you. There is something exciting about a day one when three people come together that none of the three of them are like bothering you as a viewer of the show. And you're like, okay, I could be content with these three. I mean, I'm going to use like a very obvious reference here, but like when the women of One World sort of like come together and are like, let's do this. It's like, oh, this is great because it's like, none of you are bad people to watch either. Not actually in that instance, you all seem like good human beings and you're good to watch on this show. It's like, great. I'm in, as opposed to like when a trio gets together and you're like, I don't care about the three of you as a trio enough. That's what was so great about Tika, is that all three of them were dynamic enough that you're like, oh, this is we can maximize the power of the joint sleigh here, as opposed to like having a member who's like not quite working.
Yeah, totally.
It's like, sorry, what last person? It's like NSYNC, right? It's like Joey Fatone, Chris Kirkpatrick, Lance Bass. Like, we didn't have a group of stars, as opposed to the Spice Girls, where it's like, oh, all five of you are bringing something to this table, and the equilibrium is there, and that's what gives it the longevity, as opposed to like an NSYNC, where you're like, there's just such an imbalance here. Okay.
Totally. And thank you for bringing that up. I've really been chewing over my thoughts on like an NSYNC reunion that nobody seems to care about.
Good. They fucking suck. they're the worst aspect of nostalgia culture to me.
NSYNC or Backstreet Boys?
I like Backstreet Boys.
Yeah, I think Backstreet Boys has just more timeless songs.
I completely agree.
Yeah, there's more star quality too. If we did Starless with the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC, the Backstreet Boys are winning.
Absolutely.
Okay, can we talk
about... Get them about... on Survivor!
Can we talk about Lulu? Because this is the big topic of conversation.
Okay, wait, Lulu? Because my
sheet... Yellow Tribe.
Okay.
You need a pen?
Yep. I'm going to add it, but right now I just have color. Okay, go ahead.
So this is the star tribe of the episode because they lose immunity, which, by the way, before we go in from immunity, and like, we don't really have to talk about the challenges because they're the same old challenges. There's not much to say, except I have to say that Jeff is like back a little bit in terms of like when Brandon falls from a really high height on that wall and slams his body into the ground, Jeff is like, dig deep, get up. You wanted Survivor, you got it. Where, you know, he's been like a little bit more encouraging in the past few seasons.
That's interesting. No.
Yeah, we're seeing an old Jeff sort of reemerge.
Good. Bring it on.
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, like the juxtaposition of like Brandon's lifeless body on the ground in the mud with Jeff like telling him, you wanted this, you got it. After like he already had a panic attack at another challenge. I was like, okay, Jeff, like I like this.
I see you. Can I also mention briefly, I wish this had been like given a beat. Sean just DGAF about Brandon. He literally gets to the top of the boat and is just waiting for Brandon. And then it's like minutes later where his team is like, why don't you go down there and help him up? The fact that he just like ran up and left his teammate behind with no thought as to like, oh, I can help pull him, was like, yeah, Sean really...
I think there's an element of he wants them to know it's not my fault. It's not like I'm not the one that stuck down there. Right?
Oh, absolutely. Even, and then also like when Brandon showed back up on the beach later, I just could tell that Sean was like, I'm not working with Brandon. Like his mind was made up. I got a little bit of like cool kid, like not wanting to affiliate with the unpopular kid and just sort of being like, I felt there a brewing dynamic maybe in my head, but I enjoyed that instance. And I wanted a moment of like Brandon down at the water being like, what the fuck? Like, where's my teammate?
Again, the bizarro world that Survivor is, where Sean is the cool kid.
Yep.
Okay, but what I was going to say about the immunity challenge is that I have to point out how bad the immunity idol is this season. We have a carved wooden bird. But of course, we have three tribes because they love the three tribe format. That's fine. So this one, so we always have an immunity idol that can come apart. So you can give two parts to each of the winning tribes. the top part is the entire bird. The entire bird. It's basically the idol, just like you can't stand it up anywhere. The second idol is the base. It's just like a round base that the bird sits into. It is like that. That might be the worst idol in Survivor history. That's an idol that, like, in Survivor of the Amazon, Joanna would have had no problem having that idol at the camp.
Joanna from Survivor Amazon.
Remember?
No, that's not going to be a moment that I remember.
Survivor of the Amazon, when they brought the idol back to camp and Joanna didn't want it there because it was worshiping a false god.
Yes, I do remember now. Sorry. Yes.
Like, this is a this is just a base. But of course, the tribe that is not getting the bird or the base is Lulu. And we get to spend more time with Hannah and Brandon. There's a brief 5 seconds where it seems like Hannah and Brandon are fighting over who gets to be the first to go home, which is just so funny to me. And Brandon is one of these people, we talk about this a lot, that like, and I know you have a big issue with people whose life dream it is to be on Survivor. And I always say, like, I think that that's a little bit exaggerated through like the casting process and telling them what you think they want to hear, etc. But I think in the case of Brandon, this is like one of those unique cases where this truly is his life's goal. And I believe that wholeheartedly. And, you know, think of that what you will. But the fact that he's there and then he's like, actually, like, this isn't for, like, I have acid reflux and panic attacks. Like, maybe this wasn't the show for me to go on. Maybe I should have just watched it at home. So I like that element. And then Hannah just being like, well, okay, but what if we voted for me? It did seem like I wanted that to escalate a little bit more to where they were like really fighting to be the first voted off.
That would have been really fun. It really would. Yeah. It's funny too, because just going back to like Brandon's, the swelling of his emotions when he first got on the boat, I love that. Like I that part I like. My issue is that everyone's reaction is like encouraging him. And I miss an era in which somebody comes on, they're crying about being on a boat without any of like the accommodations that they're used to. Like they literally are beginning a journey in which they're going to be starving and all this stuff. If I saw someone crying, I need those, that character and or characters who are rolling their fucking eyes and being like, this little bitch. Like that's the problem, is I want the Brandons. But I need the yin and the yang. And when everyone's sort of just like, I get it. Like, I get why you're crying. I'm like, then that's the problem. Like I need people here who don't understand this emotional outpouring over something this, for them, minute.
Yeah, well, the problem here is that Emily's on Brandon's tribe. So what we need is an Emily on each of the tribes.
Exactly.
To talk smack a little bit about the other tribe, to be like, oh, yeah, good luck to them. They like, how are they going to get this done when they're like blubbering over their like emotions here? Like, that's what we need. We need a little Emily in each tribe.
I also find it funny. I was listening to some podcasts and they were like being like, does Emily stand a chance now? And it's like, have you watched this fucking show? Of course Emily stands a chance. Like, everyone stands a chance, but like when you, of course, there's a world in which these people, they fly too close to the sun too early and everything, mm-hmm. but being polarizing like this does not necessarily compromise your game in any way. The most recent example that comes to mind would be Nora on 39, where it was like, she was annoying everybody. And it's like, mm-hmm. she was able to stay around because everyone was too busy dealing with who they thought were higher level strategic players and counting out the fact that, well, like, no one's going to vote for crazy Nora. And it's like, I could see Emily completely sailing through again episode one, but like I just found it funny about how people would be like, oh well, this Hannah vote was good because Emily was probably going to go home, and I'm like, yes, and I love that because of it.
Exactly, because the thing with an Emily player is and Nora's a great example, but like we remember the sort of like end game Nora stuff where it is that nobody's going to vote for her, but to get there there's this whole other piece where it's like by stringing along an Emily or a Nora, you're able to always have that easy vote. And you might not, the further they go in, the more you might not use that easy vote, because suddenly they become, they transform from an easy vote to an easy person to beat in the end. And so like, that's how they have longevity to their game. And I could really see that for me. Like if Lulu's able to manage avoiding going to tribal council too many times in the pre-merge, which like, I don't know if that's gonna happen or not, then Emily could be strung along in that way. This is the thing about the three tribe format, is that I feel like with these really small tribes, you put people like Emily in, you know, in the firing line too early, because absolutely. Emily's the exact kind of person who would sort of like get lost in the shuffle of a 10-person tribe where it's like, oh, exactly. Yeah, of course, like right out the gate, nobody's getting along with her. She's like unnecessarily making waves, but like we can manage that. We'll get rid of a threat earlier on, where in these small tribes, I think it's a lot easier to take that easy vote in the pre-merge.
I think Emily would be considered a swing vote in many other seasons between several alliances forming on a tribe. But because you only have six players, you got a majority alliance with four players. You're set. So you don't need an Emily the way that you should. Okay, so we're experimenting with this new shorter format. So I do want us to consciously wrap up. Is there anything that you want to leave off before we jump over to the after show, in which I think we'll be addressing some of the things we didn't get to, but is there anything you want to address on main episode?
Yeah, well, let's just talk a little bit more about the quit, I think, because what we have here is that they are going into tribal council with an Emily vote planned. And then they get there and Hannah starts to plead for them to vote her out, which seems to change everybody's mind. But my question for you is, should they have held a vote? Because that's where I like that she quit. I sort of like how it all played out. I don't like that there wasn't a vote.
Yeah, I do think there should have been a vote, but because I don't like the three tribes of six format, it's like, I would have wanted the vote on a season where there were two tribes, and so we would go down from 9 to 7 in the first episode. That I would like. The idea of going down to four, I do think it's interesting, right? Like, I'm not opposed to it, but I don't think it's as effective because it really puts them at such a disadvantage. I mean, by doing that, we would have four players sitting out of the next challenge.
But I mean, like, I'm thinking, okay, let's say they all agree on that and they vote and Hannah goes home. Mm-hmm. Like, I would have preferred that to just having Jeff verbally confirm that that was the case.
Because of course.
The reason I say that is because I saw in Sabaya's reaction that I think there was some hesitance about not having the vote. And that might just be like editing. I don't know when they pulled that moment from, but it did feel to me a little bit like they're Sabaya and Caleb in particular, who are a really interesting duo. And like, it seems like the only level-headed people on this tribe and therefore the threats of the tribe. Like, I don't know if they would have voted Hannah out, and maybe Hannah still would have gone home, but I want to see how that would play out.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's no reason not to do it.
Yeah.
It's like, why not try? Now, I do want to hold the conversation with regard to, like, the response to the quit, which I know we've got into a little bit, but I want to particularly talk about Jeff's reaction to it on his podcast and sort of the fan reaction to Jeff's lack of reaction on the show, I think is interesting to dive into. And then I also think on the after show, let's get into the secret twist that was edited out of episode one that Jeff revealed exclusively on his new podcast with Rick Devins.
Yeah.
My lips are like so colorless right now.
Yours?
Yeah, I look very sickly.
Are you okay?
I am. I'm just looking at your lips compared to mine. Mine are like purple. I look like
I've always had very red lips. People used to bully me in elementary school for my red lips. They'd be like, you're wearing lipstick. And I'd be like, I wish. So as has been alluded to here, because we haven't really talked about it, we are launching a Patreon exclusive after show each week. Our regular recap will be accompanied by an after show.
We aren't launching. We launch, baby. Like, if you're listening to this right now,
then it's out.
It's out.
It's out. We're launching it today, right now. Yeah. Surprise.
My single is dropping has dropped.
Yeah. So this is where we're going to get a little bit deeper into some of the thoughts, like as you mentioned, Jeff's reaction, et cetera, some of the fan response. We also, you know, might want to hear from you during the after shows. This is a chance to like ask us questions, et cetera. So really excited to be doing that. If you want to get in on that, you can join the Drop Your Buffs Patreon family by going to the link to our Patreon in the show notes. All right, for the post for this episode, Evan, what emoji are people going to comment?
Is anything springing to mind for you immediately?
I mean, I wish there was a little vape emoji for Hannah's nicotine withdrawal.
Yeah,
there's because not. That's so old school. That's so Shane Powers coded.
Yeah.
And I love that they threw that line in.
Uh-huh. There are logs. There are logs emojis, which, you know.
Never logs.
Okay, I was just saying.
There's a reason we didn't talk about Sweat versus Savvy.
Yeah.
Oh, is there like a lawyer? Can we do the gavel? We've done that one before, but like that would be fun.
I think we can. Hold on. I think we can.
Is there a ladder? There is a ladder. Oh, I like that ladder. Is that new? The ladder emoji?
Oh, wow.
That is a beautiful emoji.
It's a great ladder. Okay, yeah, let's go with the ladder.
Brandon's ladder struggle.
Can you do a ladder and then the crying emoji?
Choose the crying emoji of your choice. No, like this is all in good fun.
Yeah, it's all in good fun.
Brandon's a long time listener of Drop Your Buffs, by the way. So like shout out Brandon.
Shout out to Brandon.
You know.
Thank you for making television.
Thank you for making television. We're not making fun of you with the ladder and the crying. I mean, we are.
No, I get the sense I get the sense, or I want to have the sense, that those players that are following along, of which we have, what is the number again?
There's like 12 of 18.
12 of 18 that follow us and Drop Your Buffs, who I'm assuming some of which are crossing over to the podcast. If we make fun of you, it is all in good fun. We hope that you have a good attitude about it too. I do not think we have the kind of fandom that inspires people to go and leave bad reviews. But let's just caveat by saying, in addition to leaving the emoji, why don't you go on Hannah's... Well, we will leave a link to Hannah's...
So Hannah doesn't have social media.
No.
Oh, but to go leave a good Google review?
Yes, leave a good Google review. I love that. That's what I was going to say.
Let's do it. Let's be like, she cured all...
I watched her on the first episode of Survivor, and it made me realize that, like, I could
be in the premiere episode of Survivor. That she knew when to remove herself from a situation that wasn't benefiting her.
Oh my God.
So
hello.
Imagine what she could do for me.
Kim Cattrall.
Yeah, exactly.
Hello.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So, anyway, so comment the ladder emoji with the crying emoji of your choice. And we will leave a link, but you're going to go to Hannah's, is it therapy?
it's like a therapy.
Yeah, her therapy website. And just leave a great review.
All right. I love that. As always, if you enjoyed our recap of Survivor 45 premiere, you can leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really helps for people to find this podcast. And you can find us on Instagram at Drop Your Buffs Pod and on Twitter at Drop Buffs Pod.
Where I've got the keys.
Yeah. Not doing too much with it yet, but you've got the keys.
A little preoccupied. Can I say something real quick before we sign off?
Yeah.
I was in Paris. I just got back yesterday. And at the welcome drinks, I was hanging out outside. I'm name dropping here, but I'm just doing it on the podcast, so please understand. But I was standing outside, and I was, for the evening, I was hanging out with Kit Connor. Do you know who Kit is?
I've heard the name.
He's on that show Heartstopper. And then I was hanging out with the actress Nico Parker, who's probably best known from The Last of Us.
Okay.
Anyway, I did a lot of Survivor talking at this party, as I often do, and Nico texted me yesterday morning asking what season she should start with. So I have converted another celebrity listener.
Oh my God.
So maybe we'll have her on later this season.
Yeah, well, maybe we'll have several people on later this season.
I think that would be great.
I want to talk to people about Survivor 45.
Me too.
Okay.
All right. But no more now.
All right, head on over to the Patreon for the after show, because it's just getting good.
I'm ready to take my hair down. Yeah.
All right, thank you so much for listening. Bye.
Bye.